Meet me, everybody.
Joe Bear, alcoholic. Member of the Wednesday night Big Book study group. Have been since I got sober. And it's been a very important group to my sobriety and just everything about me. You know, that's the importance of a home group. I hope everybody in here that intends to stay gets a home group and becomes involved in that home group. My sponsor was very adamant about home groups. He said, you never miss your home group, ever. He says, the only legitimate reason that you should miss your home group is either you're in the hospital or the morgue. He was dead serious about it. Because he knew from his experience and from my own personal testimony that I was a very uncommitted person. Just wasn't committed to anything. No wonder my life ended up in the toilet. I was thinking about what I was saying, what I was going to say, and I was praying, and all of a sudden I feel these soft hands start to massage my neck down here during how it works. And I completely forgot everything that I was going to open. Not really. But thank you. Felt good. What is it? What is it about you or me, whether you're here for a day, a month, 3 weeks, 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years, doesn't matter. What is it about you and me that keeps us from getting sober? Emotionally sober. Sobriety that, like, gives you a sense of freedom and a sense of purpose, a sense of belonging. A sense of comfort, a sense of protection. What is it? You know? What is it that keeps us, even when we stop drinking or drugging, from being truly happy? From sense of belonging, sense of protection, sense of care. What is it? You know? You ever ask yourself that question? I used to ask myself that question. Because see, I thought all I needed to do was just stop drinking and taking drugs and my life would be fine. See, I read that first step and it said to me that if you don't drink, you can manage your life. That was a lie. I stopped many times. I think a lot of us stop many times. I stopped for 16 years. I stopped. I can't even tell you how many times. I stopped and I was stopped. I was stopped by the cops. Many times. My problem wasn't stopping. My problem is I couldn't stop starting because I remained the same individual that couldn't stop. Does that make any sense? See, you know, I can't think my way into good action. I can only act my way into good thinking. Absolutely, what's most critical in this whole deal is that I have to change my thinking. See, if I continue to think the same, I'm going to continue to feel the same. Wouldn't you say? Like, if I'm feeling a certain way, it's because I'm thinking of something or somebody or some situation that's unacceptable to me. Or not happening the way I want it to, and I'm feeling a certain way about it. Usually when I'm feeling a certain way about it, I take certain actions based on those feelings that get me results. So I think, I feel, I act, and I get a result. You know, and if you're sitting here tonight and you don't like the results of your life, it's not because you haven't been doing some actions that may be contributing to better outcome. It's because your thinking remains the same. I couldn't get a grasp on that. See, I thought if I just stopped drinking, my thinking would change. Now, I'm going to tell you something. When I stopped drinking, things got better. Cops stopped picking me up. I stopped going to jail. I started eating. I stopped suffering from severe health issues. I stopped suffering from homelessness. People started I started to have some camaraderie with people. Things just started to get better. I started to make a little money. I could put a little job together. Things got better. But ultimately, I'd start again. Because at some point, my thinking was always the same. I always became ungrateful for what I had, envious of what you had, greedy for what I wanted, disgusted with the past, terrified of the future, and things just weren't happening fast enough. And ultimately, I remained restless, irritable, and discontent. I didn't change. See, the one word theme about the entire 12-step process is change. I can't come in here and remain the same. If I do, for me, because I'm a real alcoholic, I'm going to get drunk again. And if I don't get drunk, if I can't medicate that maddening internal condition that's going on that I'm trying to pretend doesn't exist in your eyes, I'm going to be a really miserable son of a gun. I've been that too. You know, we can only fake it for so long. We can only pretend that the truth doesn't exist for so long. Eventually, we're going to have to get the sense of ease and comfort. You know what I mean? We're going to have to get that. We're going to reach out and we're going to take that sense of ease and comfort that comes in a split second by taking a drink or a drug. Because it works. Remember, our problem isn't drinking and drugging. Yeah, there's some consequences to it. But our problem begins when we put it down and we don't have anything to medicate that internal condition and not change without drinking and drugging. Somebody said this morning that a wet drunk or a dry drunk was better than a wet drunk. I don't agree with that. Now that's just me, because I've been both most of my life. And being a dry drunk was worse than being a wet drunk. I could medicate when I was wet. I could forget and erase the past when I was wet. I could not have to worry about you or deal with you or deal with it or deal with the world when I was drinking. Drinking worked for me. It killed the pain for me. My problem wasn't drinking. My problem was being undrunk with an alcoholic mind and untreated alcoholism. People put a gun in their mouth in this program from untreated alcoholism, and they'll go to 15 meetings a week and be the first to tell you about it. I mean, I've been 15 meetings this week. So? What? But you don't know about this and that and the other, and you're complaining about everything. You know, when I make a decision to seek this power, and it tells us on page 45 in the big book that lack of power was my dilemma. Lack of power was my dilemma. I had lost the power to choose whether I was going to drink or not I was going to drink. That I had to find a power greater than myself by which I could live, and it had to be a power greater than myself. That means, it says in the book, that we've written a book to be spiritual as well as moral or truthful. And that means we're going to talk about God. That means we're going to talk about God. If you're still living in the argument that you want nothing to do with God, I hope and pray that you get what you want. But chances are, as long as you live in that argument, this will remain very distant for you. I would suggest maybe you find another fellowship that has a solution that is not spiritually based, that works. I can't tell you of one. I don't know one. But I know this does work. I know this does work. Okay? We just did a whole investigation in 4 and 5. We just did a thorough surgery on ourselves to find out why the individual that I had become cannot get and stay sober. I can get and stay for a little while abstinent. I can live in a structured environment for those of you that live in sober houses. or sober living environments. I can get and stay abstinent for just so long in those environments, and the actual structure, the actual rules and regulations will be sufficient to keep me regimented in such a way where I can stay abstinent for a while and not change. But eventually the day is going to come when I'm going to have to walk out from that place. That's like, man, I'm living there for the rest of my life. Where I'm going to have to put into action the things that I learned in this program. The change that must occur. It says that the 12 steps are a set of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life, can expel, not only expel the obsession to drink alcohol, but that can enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. How were you when you got here? These are questions we must ask ourselves. When it comes to emotional sobriety, when it comes to being calm in the midst of the storm, when it comes to encountering death within our family, when it comes to encountering loss of health, when it comes to calamity in the face of society, or wherever we're at in our own little world, are you the person that can say, God's got my back, and I fear nothing at this point? Or is everything running you? Is everything running you the way it's always run you? If it's running you the way it's always run you, it's because your thinking is the same. You're still thinking about, you know what I mean? You're still thinking about him. You're still thinking about her. You're still thinking about it. Your living situation, your job situation, your money situation. You're thinking about everything but the one thing they say became central in their lives. And I'm talking about the first 100 that wrote the book. And that is the absolute certainty that God has entered into their lives and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. Is that your story? You just got to ask yourself these questions. It'll tell you where you're at and where you need to go. That he's commenced to accomplish those things in you that you could have never accomplished for yourself. Does that live for you? In the face of calamity and despair, can you still live to good purpose? What is the answer to that question? This will tell you where you're at and where you need to go. Or are you defiant, disobedient, unsubmissive, and still wanting to run the whole show? Are you still being the actor? See, we just did this whole investigation to find out why that individual, this person that we had become, cannot stay sober. And if he gets sober, or she gets sober, cannot be emotionally sober. There's a big distinction between being abstinent and being emotionally sober. Big difference. There's a big difference between being in the fellowship of AA, full-blown, reckless abandon, the guy or gal we always were, liar, cheat, thief, vile language, doing all the same things, doing all the shortcuts, doing all that hip, slick, and cool stuff that we always did before we got there. We're just not drinking and doing the same thing in the fellowship of AA. Or are you in the fellowship of the Spirit? Are you surrounding yourself with people who expect more from you than you do? Are you becoming intentionally and with purpose, with conscious thought, trying to become the best you can be? Are you trying to distance yourself from who you became with all the defects of character, the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the fear, the inconsideration, the lust, the greed, the sloth, the pride, the gluttony, the ego? Are you addressing those things and attempting to be different on a daily basis? Because see, that's what 6 and 7 is all about. See, back in the day, I think they knew that. I think they absolutely knew that their entire lives and philosophy of life would have to change if they were going to get sober and remain sober. See, this doesn't have to be a permanent thing. Relapse doesn't have to be a part of your deal. It was for me because I wasn't willing to give up who I had become. But it's not a necessity. It's not a requirement. So if you're here and you're new and you're just embarking on this thing, you got to ask yourselves what program you are engaged with. Which one are you working? Because it's a question that will determine the outcome of your near future. Okay? So, I used to hear people talking about this thing called legacy. And I always used to hear people talking about the legacy of others, of dead people. And they always, every time they were talking about legacy, they were talking about somebody that was already dead. And usually, if they were talking of, even talking about the legacy of a dead person, it was usually something that was a major contribution to society and humanity. Whether it be the society of just their family and friends or circle of influence, or society at large, or the world at large. You know what I mean? Legacy. What did they do? What did they contribute? What about them will live in the minds and hearts of people after they're dead and gone? What positive effect will they have, or did they have, on the people that knew them or knew of them? I never knew about that word, and I never even entertained that word until my sponsor brought it to my attention. And he would do these little exercises with me that really had a profound effect. First, he would have me picture myself at my funeral. He would have me picture myself in my casket, dead. Think about that picture for a moment. You can picture me, but I would say picture yourself. Who's there? Who even bothered to come? What are they doing? Are they crying uncontrollably? Are they angry? Are they bitter? Are they disappointed? What are they saying to each other about me lying in that casket? That'll give you a clear picture of the legacy that you're leaving behind, or had, were going to leave behind. Think about that for a minute. I know this, that 11 and a half years ago, if I would have died, it would have been a horrific sight. I wouldn't have had any friends there. Matter of fact, Keith and I went to a funeral, I don't know, it was a year or two ago, of a guy that we helped, and he got sober, got a business, got doing really, really well, was sponsoring people, and all of a sudden he got involved in this relationship, went off like squiggly riding sideways. Started drinking again, and was dead a very short time later, and we went to his funeral, and it was a graveside in Mount Nebo down in Miami, and there were only a handful of people there, Keith and I included, and one or two other people that were there. And the person that was conducting the funeral says, "Who would like to get up and say a few words about Paul?" Paul Stewart was his name. God rest his soul. Nobody got up. Can you imagine that? That we could create so much disappointment and so much wreckage and heartache that nobody would even want to get up and say a kind word from our family about our life, our entire life. That's the legacy I was going to leave behind. A legacy of disappointment and despair, of hurt and pain, of anger and bitterness. So, I don't know, I never asked myself that question. What is the legacy that I choose to leave behind? And really, 6 and 7 is all about that. I'm going to tell you people, it's all about leaving a legacy behind. A positive legacy. I can only tell you the legacy of the guy that I became, of what he could leave behind. The chapter's still unfinished about the legacy that I'm going to leave behind. But I know that if I die tonight on the way home, I get in a car accident and I perish. I'm dead. I'm gone. I know, I can tell you from this moment that I would not regret that I'm going home to be with my Maker. I don't believe that I would die in regret or remorse. I've straightened out the past. We began to do that in 4 and 5, where we uncovered who we've become. Who people got when we showed up on the scene. And I'm going to tell you what, change demands that that individual die so that we can be reborn. See, this book talks about recreation. It talks about being rebirthed. Being able to live 2 lifetimes within 1 life. Okay? So what am I going to do? Defects of character would indicate that there are things within me, some qualities that I was born with and taught about, some ideals and some morals and some ethics and some values that have become defective because I have been so addicted to self. I heard somebody identify themselves. They didn't know what they were. They were addicted to something other than what we were talking about. We're all addicted to self. We're all addicted to ourselves. All of us. Our outcomes, our current affairs, and everything in between. What are we going to do in order to have that be different? Well, first of all, by the description that we got, by the picture that we got in step 5 that we uncovered, all of us should be able to see that by being so selfish and so self-absorbed and always trying to dominate others, that it caused all the wreckage and all the carnage that we could possibly handle. It caused us having the funeral that I described earlier. Okay? Are you ready to have God remove those defects of character? I mean, if we uncover that properly and we look at it, if we look at the exact nature of the wrongs and our resentments, our harms, our fears, and our sexual harms, if we look at that accurately and our sponsor helps us look at that from an entirely different angle and we uncover who we became, all of us should be saying, I don't want nothing to do with that individual. Right? Typically. If you do an effective 4 and 5. You should be ready to like be so far gone from that individual that the bright promise of the new land of where I'm embarking on going is exciting as can be. Nothing, you know, we always argue for our self-imposed limitations. We're always arguing for who we always were. Well, what do you want? I'm an alcoholic. What do you expect? I've always been like that. Bah, bah, bah. You know, it's always that argument. To where we try to defend our limitations. Try to defend why I am the way I am. Like if I give you a really good excuse, it should justify me lying to you. Or me offending you. Or me gossiping about you. Or going behind your back. Or shortcutting you. Or slighting you. You should understand I'm an alcoholic. I've always been like that. Right? Wrong. You will only have the limitations that you always argue for. If we learned to be selfish and self-centered and egotistical and fearful and inconsiderate and a liar and a cheater and a deceiver and a thief and full of envy and full of greed, we learned that from somewhere. Didn't we? We weren't born with that. We saw other people doing it and it worked for them, so it must work for us, right? In the pursuit of getting what we thought we wanted. But we can unlearn that too. We're not hardwired into the way we've become. We're not doomed to be the individual that we just uncovered in step 5. If we learn to be that person, we can certainly learn to be a new person. The question is, do you want to become a new person? And more importantly, do you want to give up the individual that you had become? You know, we're all linguistic experts in here. That if all of us were born here and transported to China, we'd look American, speaking Chinese with Chinese values and probably worshiping Buddha. Why? Because that's what we were taught. We're all linguistic experts. We just haven't learned the languages yet. Do you follow what I'm saying? We can all be considerate. We can all be honest. We can all have integrity and conduct ourselves in an honorable manner and have ethics and values and morals and principles that are inspiring to other people and make an impact on humanity in a positive way. We just haven't learned them yet. Here's where we do. 6 and 7 is all about a program of change, but it's all about preparation and execution. You follow me? I know who I've become. See, that four-step, that, you know, I don't know where they get burn that thing and put it in a bottle and float it out somewhere. Why would you do that anyway? Float it out like somebody could get that thing and read it. You know what I mean? Don't put your name on it if you're going to do that. We need step 4 because we make the list of the people that we had harmed. We're going to need that for 8 and 9 because we got to know who are they say when we get to the A step that we have our list. We got it when we took step 4. We're going to need column 3 and 4 to know the exact nature of the wrongs for that which we are going to make amends to those people in column 1, and we're going to need column 5 to do this 6 and 7 thing. The defects of character. 6 and 7, I mean, the defects of character of where we've fallen short, where we have become addicted to self, and the manifestations of that. So where we have not pursued honesty, we become liars. Habitual ones. At least I did. And the only time I told the truth is when it gave me something really better than lying. You know what I mean? I've said it before. If I could tell the truth and get $10 and tell a lie and get $5, I'm going to tell a lie anyway. It doesn't make any sense, does it? I should want to tell the truth. I'm going to see if I can put my hand on this. There's some really good books on 6 and 7. One of them is this little book. It's called Drop the Rock. It's a great study book. I don't know that it's conference approved. It doesn't really matter to me. There's a lot of books that aren't conference approved. The Bible's one of them, and I study that all the time. If I'm not changing my behavior because of pain, who am I trying to impress? Could it be that I'm trying to live up to an ideal in order to make an impression? See, I can use a lot of character attributes, and a lot of character qualities, as a devious way to get what I really want. You know what I mean? The defects that remove me from service are removed on and for the day that I ask. God lets me keep the rest of my defects. Listen to this. To remind me of my need for my spiritual contact with Him. They remind me that there is a God and I need Him. Just try to remove your selfishness. See, it's really, really important that even from the beginning that you get a really good sponsor or you get a sponsor that really knows this information and that's not going to sell out on you. See, we can get sponsors that we know will gravitate to our level of output and stop pushing us when we get there. We like to sell out on ourselves, don't we? I mean, we're the first ones that are going to compromise. We're the first ones that are going to say, hey, you know. Surround yourself with people. You know, they talk in the fifth step about finding somebody that you can tell this fifth step to that knows what you're driving at. Well, what are you driving at? You ever ask yourself that question? John asked me that question. What are you driving at, Joe? Who do you want to become? What do you want? Well, I knew what I didn't want. And then I knew what I did and uncovered who I had become to get that. So I didn't want to be him no more. And John had those character qualities. And my present sponsor, Roy, has those character qualities. They emulate the things that I want to have in my life. Integrity. Honesty. Dignity. Self-worth. self-esteem, morality, ethics, sharp corners, boundaries, authenticity. Think about that. So I guess you really got to ask yourself what you want. And the thing is when you have that vision, because 6 and 7 is you got to have a vision. You got to have a vision of who you want to become. You surround yourself with people that will expect more from you than you will. So when you're falling, when you're ready to sell out, when you're ready to cut a corner or entertain doing something that's less than admirable, you have your friends in your corner that are going to say, dude, that's not what you told me you want. What are you talking about? You just told me the other day that this was the way it was, and now you're saying it's this the way it was. Is that a lie? What is that? Because see, if I don't have people like that in my life, even though I just uncovered who I had become and gotten a clean vessel, I'm going to go back to that guy. Matter of fact, he's coming back with a vengeance. I got to have people to keep me in check. Became entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. All these defects of character. This is what separates the men from the boys, people, and the girls from the women, right? That just in and of itself, separating the men from the boys, indicates to me that there's going to have to be some serious growth here. I'm going to have to grow up here. I'm going to have to stop being a thumb-sucking crybaby. Thank you, Russell, for that expression. Here. I'm going to have to get off my butt and start doing stuff. I'm going to have to stop being lazy in order to be responsible. I'm going to have to start telling the truth in order to be honest. And not until I do those things, not until I exert that energy in those different things, am I going to know what the rewards are for doing them anyway. It's all going to be hypothetical. You know what I mean? Remember that herd mentality we talked about? We're talking about spiritual regeneration. We're talking about developing a relationship with the power greater than ourselves to become God conscious. To get to this place where we're on the plane of inspiration, spiritual inspiration, directed from a different place than we ever have been, where our moral compass is pointing us in a position that is demanding that we follow. And when we don't, we pay the price. We may not pay a price outwardly, but I guarantee you, if God is directing your show, you will pay the price internally, in your conscience. You absolutely will. We want to develop this sixth sense, right? I guess this says it best. This clergyman that said that it separates the men from the boys goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on all his faults, that means be willing on everything, on all my faults, without any reservations whatever, has indeed come a long way. And is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his Creator. There must be desire to want to become that individual. There's got to be willingness on our part, which should come from the carnage that we uncovered in the previous step, and the willingness to have God take us to better things. To become the individual that we really want to become, that we desire to become. Will we ever become that perfect individual? Absolutely not. As soon as we think everything's going hunky-dory, man, one of them things will pop up. Somebody will pop into your face and make you go it sideways. They just will. You know, you can almost expect it. That's why sometimes I'll say that serenity prayer. I'll say, God, grant me the serenity to expect the things I cannot change. So what am I doing in the morning? Am I preparing? Because this whole thing is about preparation. They say in the third step that the effectiveness of the whole AA program will depend on how well and sincerely I do the third step, turning my will and my life over to God's care. What am I doing in the morning? In step six, I have to be prepared, knowing who I had become, to venture out and not be that individual, to be the opposite of that individual. So if I'm a liar, I need to have some support people tell me, you know, to surround them and say, look, man, I have a problem with telling the truth. I have a problem with embellishing the truth. I have a problem with lies of omission. I have a problem here and I have a problem there. I need your help. I need you to step in my stuff every time you see that coming on. We need to do that. We need to have a support system in this journey. And in my preparation in the morning, in the process of me turning my will and my life over to God's care, for the sixth step, I'm entirely ready to have God remove the individual that I had become. In this area, and that area. And then I'm going to implore and beg His help, I do, throughout my execution of that day, in with the hopes of becoming better than I was yesterday. Okay? Says, the first, one thing I want to say is that, you know, we hear a lot about material achievement and achievement and getting stuff, and, you know, and there's nothing wrong with having stuff. Nothing wrong with having money. Nothing wrong with having a beautiful family. There's nothing wrong with having a beautiful home, cars in the garage. There's nothing wrong with having a big bank account. There's nothing wrong with having stuff. The problem is when we depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for us here on earth, and that's to start worshiping it. And in 6 and 7, we are all about changing those defects of character that are so consumed with acquiring stuff as the end all of life. Okay? Remember, we're here. Our primary purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to our fellow man. Right? How do I do that? Most key is preparation, where I get up in the morning and I envision that day. John told me, he says, when you get up, he says, you play the movie forward. What are you going to do that day? You know who you're going to see. You know who you're going to interact with. You know, basically, the people that you're going to see and interact with that day. There may be some incidentals. But how are you going to be with those people that is different than the way you've been with them? How are you going to be with them in a way that makes a positive impact rather than the way it's always been? And you just envision that through. You play it through. It only takes a few minutes. And then in the simple prayer that the book outlines here, they're not digging it. It says, when we've outlined that day, when we've envisioned our day, it says, when ready, we say something like this: my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So we're trying to clear a channel here. We're trying to, you know, create access to this power. We're trying to get a new perspective on life. And sometimes getting a new perspective is unbelievably painful, especially when we enlist people in our lives that are going to help us achieve our vision, when they point out when we're not behaving or we're not coming up to our standard of our vision. We're not doing what we say we want to do. We're not being who we say we want to be. Those are the friends that you can truly call friends. It's the ones that let that behavior go on with reckless abandon that are just selling you out. So who are you surrounding yourself with? I want people that are going to step in my doo-doo. I want people that will see me achieve my dream, achieve my vision. That's who I want in my life. That's who I have in my life. But you got to know, when you come in and you start on this thing, you will be apt to congratulate yourselves when things are going really well. Looks like this. Taking credit for the very thing that God has been doing for me. We come in, we're bored, right? Like this. Pure, uncontaminated glass of water. But through life, through the things that we see other people having, through desires, through obsessions and things that we really see as the end all of life, and we go into that acquirement mode, and we get addicted to self, and we're just selfish, self-centered to the extreme, we become this. Defected. You with me? Contaminated. And we're infecting and contaminating everybody in our path. And we become a dark, dirty glass of water. You with me? We get here. We do step 5. We get everything out. We pop the boil. You know what I'm saying? Ah, relief. You know how that feels? Man, it's a relief. So is the step 5. We get on this thing, we start to do, and all of a sudden we get like, it's almost like that pink cloud come back. Like we're rocking and rolling. Things are good. You know, we're not offending. Everything seems to be going all right. And then we get faced with a compromising situation. Perhaps the fellas want to go to that club that I shouldn't be going to. Or perhaps I get the urge or the obsession to do something that didn't work out well for me in the past. So, here I go. All right, let me put a little bit of this in there. And all of a sudden, that clear glass of water that we're pursuing to become the man or woman that God created us to be, we start to contaminate it with who we've always been. Perhaps at work we get a job where we got to lie a little bit. We're trying to live clean and be clean and do the right thing and become an honorable, honest human being, but we got to lie at work. Hey, I got to make a living, right? Ooh. She's hot. I mean, she is hot. I'm going to just bend a few things, right? I don't tell her I'm an alcoholic. God knows, she might not like me. I may not get ultimately what I really want. Ooh, lust starts to come back into the picture. All right. So this goes on and on and on until we become this. You know what I mean? Humility, they say, is a sincere desire to seek and do God's will. A sincere desire to seek and do God's will. To glorify Him rather than me. Most of us come in here addicted to glorifying ourselves, do we not? Didn't work out real good. Didn't get us in a real nice place. They say that humility can be described as this clear recognition of who and what we really were or have become. Followed, 4 and 5, we do that in 4 and 5, clear recognition of who and what we really were. Followed by a sincere attempt to become who we can be. 6, 7, 8, and 9. What am I doing every day to distance myself from the very person that was doomed to die? A miserable, disgusting, lonely, alcoholic, drug-addicted death. Am I working on that? If you can say to your satisfaction that you are, you will never be who you want to be, but you definitely won't be who you used to be. It's all about desire. It's all about willingness. And it's all about becoming of maximum service to God and to my fellow man. It's all about freedom. It's all about being authentic. It's all about being integrous. It's all about having boundaries. I mean, it's all about becoming a person that can sleep at night, knowing that I didn't have to pretend or fake who I was being. Somebody that can truly help somebody out of that deep, dark cave. Will we ever get to where we want to go? Will we ever be perfect? No. But are you striving for a self-determined objective? Or are you striving for the perfect objective, which is God? Are you going for the gold? Or are you going to settle for silver? What is it? I'm going to close with this. And I know I'm going a few minutes, but hopefully we can get that reading done quickly tonight. A silversmith. We're kind of like this. We can liken our lives in 6 and 7 to the way they used to refine silver. We're in this refining process, this purification process, if you will. And the way the silversmith used to do it is he used to have this big pot called a smelting pot. And they used to put it over this fire that would give it up to such a high degrees that it would literally boil the metal. And what would happen is every now and then, every so often, the silversmith would come in as the impurities were boiling to the top of the metal. He would ladle it off with a big ladle, right? And he'd come in and he'd ladle it off. And it was the crud. It was all the impurities of the metal. Until eventually, when he came in and ladled it off, the only way he would know it was pure silver is when he would look into the pot and see his own reflection. This is exactly what God does with us. He brings us through this process because we're willing to change. And he allows us to go through pain where he can just ladle off the crud and we become refined. And by the time we get to the 12th step and had the spiritual awakening, which of this is crucial, he will be able to look in us and see his reflection. Now that's the thing that drives me. I hope it drives you. Next week, 8 and 9.